don't make it about your business first. Make it about the customer first. The customer really needs to see themselves in what you're offering.
Welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace, where we discuss real-time workplace issues with experts to get you the best solutions for your company. I'm your host, Carol Schultz, organizational strategist and creator of the Organizational Scaffold System. Let's get into it. Greetings, everyone. Welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace. I'm Carol Schultz. I have a favor to ask. If you aren't already following us on Spotify, now's the time. So stay alerted with each and every new episode. So today we're going to discuss the idea of standing out in a commodity-driven world. When everything's copied and options are limitless, how can your brand truly become of one and of itself? And here to ponder this question with me is Rachel Gogos, founder and director of strategy at Brand ID. You know, Rachel, I'm delighted to have you with me today. And before we get into today's topic, tell us a little bit about what you do.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here too. What I do, well, I started an agency 17 years ago. We do personal branding, business branding, and we build a lot of websites actually. Mm-hmm. And we also offer content marketing. My role specifically is around a lot of the business strategy, brand strategy, how to grow a business online and expand it. But we are a full service agency. We offer copywriting, like I said, web design, mm-hmm. development, and content marketing. Because I always say, just because you build the site doesn't mean people will come. You have to actually market it, right?
Yep, you do. And that's a really good point. So, you know, when people come to you, what usually has them, you know, pick up the phone and reach out?
Mostly it's that their website is just out of date. You know, mm-hmm. their messaging is out of date. The look and feel looks dated, and right. they're just ready to upgrade. A lot of times people have created their own sites and are, you know, now have grown their businesses and are ready to invest in a professional agency creating their business online and growing it.
What do you think prevents them from doing that in the first place?
Budget. You know, a lot of people when they're launching businesses really want to save and cut corners where mm-hmm. they can. So they DIY things, which is a shame, right? Because the first thing mm-hmm. people do is Google a website to yeah. learn about a service provider or a product brand. And mm-hmm. you really have to look legit and professional to be able to grow it. I think, you know, especially now, I mean, maybe back a decade, 15 years ago, it wasn't so important, but websites and look and feel have come yeah. such a long way online that it's really important to look like a pro from the get-go.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I'm so glad you mentioned about, you know, people, they, you know, they've got budget constraints. And I'm thinking, you know, I've said ad nauseum, because I also guest on many podcasts, mm-hmm. that if you're going to start a business and you don't have money to invest into your business in the areas that it's really important, you have no business going into business.
Yeah, because it takes a while. It takes little time to grow a business.
I don't know if people just think it's going to be easy. I mean, and early in my career, I was one. I mean, I resembled that comment. Mm-hmm. I was that way. And I finally just came to my senses and I thought, this is ridiculous. I'm producing crappy product. Yeah. You know, what about when somebody refers me and they go to my website and they're like, this is horrible.
Right. Exactly.
You know, or there's no decent SEO on it, or, you know, whatever the issues are, right?
Yes.
You know, or it's, there's so many companies out there, you know, whether it be GoDaddy or, you know, any of these companies, right? That, you know, you can buy your URL, your name, and you know they all have a some sort of a, you know, do it yourself theme.
Yes.
And they're horrible. I did that years ago and it was awful.
They are. You know what else we've seen a lot lately, Carol, is people using AI to build their websites,
right?
And similar, I mean, you know, to someone who's a little bit more of a novice, it could look okay initially, but mm-hmm. you can tell that the content is really mechanical, or as mm-hmm. I like to say it, just technically correct and really lacking emotion yeah. and soul and depth. And same with, you know, layout and yeah. design and some of the images. It's just, we try to tell clients, like, it's going to be tough to really connect with the audience. People want to see real. Mm-hmm. They don't want to see something created, computer generated. They want to know that you can, you know, you're a trustworthy brand and that you're able to invest in your look and feel online and not take shortcuts.
Yeah. Well, and we could talk about AI and its misuses, or, you know, people thinking this is going to be the panacea for everything, and it's really not, right?
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, listen, it's helpful. I use it.
Yes.
But we use it in my company, and it can save massive amounts of time in certain things. And then there's other things where you're going to get a product and you're going to be like, oh, I've got to rewrite the entire thing. It looks terrible. And you can tell a computer generated it, right?
Yes.
So whether you're a B2B or a B2C business, what do you recommend to become a, let's call it a non-commodity?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the biggest differentiator in every business is the founder, right? Because there's only one human that is that person, or multiple if there's a partnership, right? It's like a snowflake or a fingerprint. There's just one of each.
Right.
And so we really encourage founders to become the mouthpiece or the face of their business brand. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, we're living in a world where people want to know who is behind a business brand. What's their value system? What do they support? What's their ethos? They really want to know about a company before they make a buying decision from it. So, you know, you can really, I was going to say, like, kind of kill two birds with one stone, like put your biggest differentiator out there, founder. And also, you know, create a relationship with your ideal demographic at the same time, right? By sharing more about what your company stands for. So, that's what we recommend.
Yeah. And I think that's super important. You know, we had there was a time last year where we thought we would play around with doing an avatar of me because getting me to produce reels is a major project for my chief of staff.
Yeah.
I just hate doing it. It takes so long to set it up. And, you know, then I have to do, you know, a million different tests because, you know, my right shoulder's out of the frame or my nose is out of the frame or something's out of the frame, right?
Yeah.
And so getting me to do it is such a project. And we tried, I don't even remember how many, but enough different companies, the work product was always crap. And I thought, well, I'm just going to have to suck it up and to figure it out. And that's, you know, that's what I'm done. I'm at some point, will we be able to do that? Maybe. But, you know, I think what's going to happen is, to your point, people are going to get to the point. I think people are getting to the point already. I know I am. When, I mean, I can just look at a Facebook reel and think, oh yeah, that's totally AI generated.
Right.
And you know, hopefully somebody's got enough, what's the word I'm looking for?
Discernment.
Yeah, discernment, or, you know, where it can say, you know what, I'm not even gonna do this because I'm putting out crappy product instead of actually taking my time, which is what people want to see. It's just inauthentic, right?
Yes, totally.
Yeah. So, you know, what mistakes, and I think you might have talked about some of these already, but what mistakes do you see companies making early on that limit them later when it comes to branding?
Not investing in, again, like in their online presence, not investing in good copywriting. And today it really needs to be optimized for AI.
Yep.
Being mindful of what your keywords are, really being clear on who your target audience is and what their pain points are and what you're solving, the problem your product or your services are solving for them. And in writing your web copy, making sure that that's front and center. Don't make it about your business first. Make it about the customer first. The customer really needs to see themselves and what you're offering, right? And that's in the writing, that's in the images that you choose. They need to be able to relate to it, to identify with it. And then the last thing that I see a lot is constantly shifting marketing strategies and tactics before really giving a tactic enough time to land
and
make an impact. And especially people who don't have a marketing background, we just find them to be really unrealistic around timing, how long something takes to really build momentum and being able to stick with it, you know?
Yeah, that's so good. And, you know, as I listen to this, I'm thinking, you know, looking into my past, right? I mean, whenever we try something new, we always give it at least 90 days.
That's great.
And not the 90 days you're going to get from exactly from point A to point B or point A to point Z, but that we actually see progress over that time.
Yes.
Right.
And you have to constantly pivot the strategy too.
Exactly.
You have to react.
That's exactly right. And, you know, it's funny, my chief of staff sent me a message today and said to me that she wants me to do a video for something. And she says, and don't do it in your office. She goes, do it in the car, do it, you know, do it here or do it there. And it's fine for you to, you know, just kind of do it as a selfie, right? You're holding the camera and you're doing this for yourself. And I thought that was really interesting because this is specifically for Instagram. And she said, you know, there's so many AI videos now out there and you know, people really want to see authentic.
Yes.
Like I said, people are getting, I mean, I think many people are already getting sick and tired of, oh God, you know, enough already with the AI. Is this what we're turning into? Just machines everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't surprise me because it's the new shiny object.
Right.
I think it's going to help businesses in many ways, but I think that it's going to, in other ways, end up being a detriment, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't want to do business with somebody who's inauthentic. I just don't.
How do you build trust, right? If you don't really know them.
Exactly. Yeah. That's
and if great. They're putting up a facade, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So what inspired you to start Brand ID?
Oh, that's a good question. So I had been very entrepreneurial in my earlier my earlier professional days and had had a business when I lived in New York City with a couple business partners. And eventually I moved to Pittsburgh. When I moved to Pittsburgh, I worked as a VP of marketing at an organization. And then I started having children and I wanted more flexibility, but I also wanted to keep working. But I also, again, was like driven to start something. And 17 years ago, personal branding was really cutting edge. It was probably ahead of its time. But I had read an article in Time Magazine about one of the influencers in the industry, one of the early adapters named William Aruda. And I decided to take his certification program and I launched my agency just a month or two after my second child was born. And actually William hired me to work with him and really build out his newsletter and do some marketing with him. And we collaborated on some early projects and it was a lot of fun. And ever since then, I've just grown the agency really steadily and slowly, but intentionally. And I employ a lot of other females that are moms and we've all had the ability to, you know, work from home. The agency's always been remote from day one. So before Zoom and Slack, I don't even remember how we did it in the early days, to be honest with you. Yeah. But yeah, it's been great. We've worked with a lot of amazing people, a lot of really fascinating founders doing great things, from professional athletes to media and entertainment CEOs that left major jobs to start their own businesses. And as I mentioned, we were hyper-focused on personal branding. And then the last 5 years or so, we've really started leaning into businesses and enterprises as well. And that's also been a really rewarding and fun work, is helping larger businesses solve challenges that they're experiencing online.
Yeah. And I want to talk about that, but you know, you've now mentioned personal branding twice, and I want to talk a little bit more about that. And, you know, what's the impetus behind, you know, somebody, you know, why do I come to you to say, you know, Rachel, I think I need some personal branding?
Well, like, it's, again, it's your biggest differentiator in the business that you're growing, whether it's a business of one or a business of 200 people. It's, there has to be a human, a face behind a business brand. People like doing business with people, right? They want to have a human experience. So that's another reason. Also, just a common myth about personal branding is that it's very, you have to be very extroverted or kind of ego-driven, but that's not at all true. We have worked with so many people that lean to the introvert side. And it's really about finding a platform or two and a methodology or an approach where you're comfortable creating content for, right? Because it is time consuming to build your personal brand, unless you outsource it, which can totally be done to an agency like ours. But it has to be something you enjoy because people feel that energy. So whether it's a podcast or whether it's writing blogs or being really active on social, you have to find an approach that you like and enjoy doing. it's really important.
Yeah, that is interesting. And then, you know, so, and then looking at the business side of things, how does that differ?
What do you mean in terms of?
Well, because I mean, it, you know, you say whether you're the face
of business brand,
you know, two people or 200 people, right? Mm-hmm. So what's the difference between the personal branding and the business branding then?
I see. Nothing really, but I will say this. And I can actually give you an example. So we talked to one of our clients we've been working with for a couple of years. He was the former CEO of Comedy Central. He helped Ted Turner build CNN. He had a really incredible career in the media, news, entertainment industry, and still does. But now he's working more solo. And we just talked the other day. And he's actually investing in starting he was really involved in WWE back in the day. So he's really involved in starting another league. I'm not going to mention what it is quite yet because it's not live. But he said, listen, and we built this personal branded site a couple of years ago and launched it. He said, I'm really now ready to invest in continuing to market my personal brand because I'm launching this new business. That he's taken on investors and it has tremendous growth potential, but he knows that he has to also build his personal brand along with the business brand. So, you know, in those cases, when we're working with both a personal and a business brand, it's great because it's total synergy between the two, right?
The messaging together.
On the personal side needs to reinforce what's being said on the business side. And the messaging slightly different depending on the platform, right? So like in this case, this person's LinkedIn messaging and social posts are going to be a little different than what the business would be putting out on, say, Instagram or Facebook, right? And that business wouldn't get a lot of traction on LinkedIn, but the personal brand, the founder's personal brand will get a ton of traction on LinkedIn, right? So that's where the differences lie is in what is the audience that we're speaking to on which platform and how do we adjust the messaging to get people to learn more about the business brand? Because ultimately, all these different communications tactics are outposts. So if you think of a wheel, the website is in the middle, especially for businesses that are fully remote, right?
Right.
That's the hub. And all the other things, social media, blogs, newsletters, podcast interviews, PR, those are all spokes on the wheel, and they all have to point the traffic back to the website because that's where the information is. That's where the conversion can take place.
Right, right.
And so, you know, the more integrated we are between founder messaging, C-suite messaging, whatever that might be, and the business, the much more powerful all this is. It's really building out an ecosystem.
Yeah, no, I love that. So you've been in business now closing in on 19 years this fall, including yourself. You're a small team, only about a dozen people. So has it just been, you know, I don't really want to grow beyond this or, you know, I mean, that still seems like a small team given, you know, some of the types of people you mentioned that you're doing business with.
Well, I would say we're small but mighty, right? I mean, we have really good processes and systems in place that we've honed over time. We have a framework that we take people through. Right now, the team size is just perfect for the amount of business we have. And we also have people that are project-based. They're not all visible on our website. So we kind of pull them in as needed. But I always like to have... I always tell our management team, it's always important to have a plan B, you know, in terms of implementation. So we have other resources to pull in and partners to refer business to. If it's say, like, we don't do SEO, we do the baseline SEO, we build your website. So it's optimized for SEO. We can help you for redirects, you know, for migrating a site and losing some pages. We can certainly do that, but we don't do ongoing SEO, but we have partners for that. So, you know, we like to stay in our lane and know where we're really, really strong and develop partnerships where it's better for us to refer business to.
That's great. How do your prospects typically find you?
It's usually word of mouth or a partner referral or Google. Those are the primary ways.
And right so you talked about keywords. What are people searching when they find you?
WordPress websites, personal branding. Those are probably the most
common.
That has
to be a super competitive market, as we've talked about, right?
It is.
Because
it
there's, is. You know, as I probably mentioned when you and I first spoke, I mean, I get just deluged with people pitching me new websites. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll do a free thing on your website. No, we're good. Thank you very much. You know, we're just continually looking at the website, updating it, and making changes. And, you know, I mean, not continually, but from time to time, we like go through a process where we update some things and then we see how that's working. And, you know, same thing with the person who does all my SEO and my AEO, right?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's, I'm just thinking to myself, in what world am I going to get a pitch on LinkedIn or in the email and hire you? I mean, maybe it works with some people.
Mm-hmm. It's tough, right? Like we haven't cracked that code. Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you have, or you know, someone that has, let me know.
Yeah.
I would also say, you know, you and I talked about the commoditization of some industries and, mm-hmm. you know, the web agency world is certainly a commoditized world.
Question.
And we really, you know, our price points and our expertise is really more of like a business web consulting agency versus like a web agency, in that people come to us with their problem and tell us where they want to get, and we figure that out. So
right.
Our price points tend to be higher than your typical web agency, mm-hmm. because we're really doing a lot more strategic consulting. Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's, you know, that's just one more thing, right? When we talk about the commoditization of any number of markets, mm-hmm. you know, how do you separate the wheat from the chaff, right? And I say this frequently. I mean, this is the problem in the coaching industry now, right? I mean, I started my training in 1998,
mm-hmm.
and I would assert I have more coaching training experience than, you know, probably 95% of the people on LinkedIn.
Yes.
But, you know, if you search coaches on LinkedIn, you're going to come up with something like 4.5-5 million people now.
Yeah.
Whereas crazy. In, you know, back in maybe 2018, 2019, there was maybe like 46,000. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's unbelievable, the explosion, because, you know, and the question is, and this is why I get pitches all the time. Oh, we help coaches and consultants. I'm like, yeah, just delete, delete, delete. Mm-hmm. Because although coaching is part of what I do, it's not what I sell to anybody, because nobody needs that. Nobody wants that.
Right.
Right. So, you know, we've of course figured out a way to, you know, do something different, and they just get all the other benefits along with it. And, mm-hmm. and I think that's anybody's, to your point, to figure out what the actual problem is, mm-hmm. so you can come up with an actual solution,
mm-hmm.
to not being a commodity. Because it's, you know, like I said, we are all just deluged with, I mean, even the reels, you know, anybody who's doom scrolling on Instagram or Facebook or whatever, you know, and then the messages, the million messages I get. I mean, every, you know, the number of things that land in my junk mail every day, mm-hmm. you know, I don't look at it every day. I look at it maybe once or twice a month, and I'm like, oh my God, I've got 900 pieces of email in my junk. Yikes.
Yeah, they add up fast. What is that something different you've started doing, Carol?
Well, I mean, you know, my whole process around the organizational scaffold system, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, the way to free founders from being hostages to their companies.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it goes back to my 34 years. Is that right? Yeah, 34 years almost in the fall. It'll be 34 years of experience that I have, right? You know, first as a professional headhunter, and then adding on executive coaching and working in the SMB space, right? So mm-hmm. I've seen for over 30 years the problems that founders have. And you know what? It's almost always the same kind of stuff. You know, there's really no reinventing of the founder problem wheel here, right? So, you know, finding somebody for me who is really spectacular, and this guy is, I've had other people do SEO that did a horrible job.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's a genius. 27 years old, 26 maybe. He's a genius, and he knows how to do AEO, which is even more important. I've been getting phone calls from people. Where'd you find me? It was either on Google or ChatGPT.
Uh-huh.
I'd never been able to rank on Google prior. So it's finding the right keywords, as you know.
Yes.
And putting in, you know, we've put in basically hidden pages on my website. That will still allow, with the keywords, it'll allow them to be found.
Amazing.
You know, so yeah, I mean, it is. It's and we've been at that part of it since January. And the difference in, you know, 4 months right? Because we're just into the 1st of May. Yes. I mean, you know, after the first month of the 16 keywords we started with, two of them were ranking in the top 10.
Amazing.
And then in month two, I think we had 5 ranking. Mm-hmm. And then in month 3, we had like, I don't know, I must have been 8 or 10. Mm-hmm. And now we've changed some of them, the ones that haven't been ranking high enough. We've made some changes to them. We'll see where that goes. So, I mean, it's like unbelievable.
And that I think great.
That that's, good results. You know, and that's, you know, my only advice to anybody listening to this, I mean, obviously I'm not the interviewee here, but is that you really have to find somebody who knows what they're doing. And, you know, listen, I spent 30 years as a professional headhunter. I don't know shit about SEO. Mm-hmm. About reels, about, you know, those algorithms. I don't know anything about that. So it makes it impossible for me to find those kinds of people. How do I know they're any good?
How did you find your SEO guy?
I found him on Upwork.
Oh, good. Okay.
And the funny thing is he said to me, he hardly gets any business out of Upwork. I said, well, it must be kismet then that I found you. Because I found other people on Upwork that, very disappointing. Mm-hmm. And it's because I don't understand SEO.
Right.
He does. You know, a lot of people, I believe, think SEO is nothing about creating backlinks and stuff like that. I don't even think they're doing any of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, they might be doing a little bit of it, but that's not the main focus with what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah he's very, very, very good. So I think I've referred him to a couple of people because he is so good. And that's, I think that's really, you know, listen, that's the challenge in any business, right? Is how to find the right talent. And I don't want to, you know, I don't want to waylay this conversation, obviously, because that's not what this is about. But, you know, as somebody who spent that many years as a professional headhunter, that's always been my thing.
Yes.
You know, if you don't have the right people, you're not getting anywhere. You know, yeah, you have to generate revenue. Yeah, you have to have product. But if you don't have the right people, you're not going to get the first or second thing I just mentioned.
It's so true. Your team is everything.
Yeah. You know, so you mentioned you had a lot of, you know, a lot of mothers and things. Are these people that already have experience in this field that, you know, they just their babies and, okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And they kind of just work how much ever they want, or how do you figure that out when somebody's got kids at home?
It's really, well, I should say some of our teammates, you know, their kids have grown up with us, like our technical manager's child is almost 8, and she started working with us when she was pregnant with, and that's her 3rd child. Her other ones are much older. So it's not however much somebody wants to work. It's really driven by our pipeline and how much work time is needed by each of the different skill sets. And like I mentioned, we have a process and systems. We create timelines for customers because we're always dealing with multiple clients at the same time. So we've got, you know, we have to be managing that pipeline at all times and adapting it because a lot of times customers take their time and giving feedback.
So you mentioned earlier that you employ a number of, you know, women who have, you know, who are raising their children, you know, maybe their husbands work outside the home. Tell me a little bit about that. Did they take time off to have kids? They already had experience in the field.
Yes. Everyone on our team has had experience in their field, in their part of the project. You know, the writers come with a lot of experience, the designers, the developers, et cetera. And in fact, I wanted to share that a lot of our teammates, like their kids have grown up with us. So our technical manager, for example, was pregnant when she interviewed with me, and now her child's almost 8, and that's her youngest of 3. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, we're flexible. Some of the roles don't necessarily require you to be on from 9 to 5. So, you know, I always say where there's a will, there's a way. You know, we have right now 1 man on our team, but, you know, we've had more different time periods. So it's not that it's just women. It's just has been honestly just an honor for me to be able to support women who want to have careers, but also still be present and available to their children. Well, you know,
and I applaud you for that because I'm also a big fan of women being, you know, giving women what they need to be successful, because it, you know, it's especially with our current administration, it's very hard. You know, you just see a lot of, they don't want to see any diversity, I believe. Right. So I'm a big fan of really helping other women out. I think it's super, super important, you know, in the world we live in these days. and even in general anyway.
Right.
Is there anything that, you know, anything else that maybe we haven't talked about that I haven't asked you that has you thinking, well, this is something, you know, something that I think is really, really important when, you know, when trying to separate your, you know, again, separate the wheat from the chaff and so that you're not just seen as a commodity. Because again, there's, like you said, coaching seems to be a commodity anymore and websites seem to be a commodity anymore. And there's, you know, many, it's, you know, if for anybody who's read Blue Ocean Strategy, that's what that's all about, right? You know, playing, most people are playing in the red ocean, just trying to, you know, scrap and claw their way into getting a little bit of business.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say, you know, you have to look at your competition when creating your business and also figure out how you're different, why you're different. Another example I can give you is we've started working with various cigar brands in the last couple of years. And there's actually three we've worked with. And one of them was a completely new business when we started working with them. And we did analyze, you know, the online presence of the major players in the industry and looked at how we can differentiate also, not just from the online presence, but also from the products carried and distributed internally in the company. And then once we identified what was kind of missing in the local market and how to really make our mark, and then also how to expand that online, you know, that particular company's had an amazing first year, like beat industry standards in terms of revenue. And also we won an award for best cigar lounge in the north of the United States at the major industry show. You know, and again, that was by paying attention to differentiators, really heavily investing in marketing. The founders very forward thinking and knew that marketing was a key investment into growing and standing out. And, you know, this is an industry where only 1% of the population invests in cigars. So it's also not an easy industry to make a mark in.
I have a million friends who smoke, including myself, love to smoke cigars. Oh, that's so funny. So what can you point to one or two of the things that you did for this specific, you know, client that really set them apart?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have had a really active Instagram, you know, really invested in Instagram posts, making sure that the brand had a high-end look. This particular company focuses in like the hard to find and rare cigars, but there's also a lot of cigars available at, you know, lower price points. The majority of the cigar market, I think it's about 90%, invests in cigars that are $10 or less. But again, like finding that sweet spot of like, it's another ecosystem. You have to have product available for various markets. We also connected with a cigar influencer early on in the industry, and that helped. The founder had an interview on that on a very popular podcast that helped in just, you know, gaining some visibility and trust and authority in the business as well. And there's other great contacts that have been cultivated through other partners that the founder has again in the industry. And the look and feel of the site is unique from an e-commerce side, again, like in this industry. So we gave it a very intentionally an elegant high-end look as well. And so the combination of all those things, it's not just one thing, a great team that's on the ground, you know, welcoming customers and being able to attract customers from all over the U.S., you know, through the e-com site has also been helpful. So yeah, like I said, it's a combination of things for sure.
I love it.
Events. We host a lot of local events that, you know, and host a lot of manufacturers that come to do in-person events. Yeah. So it's just different tactics and making sure though, that every tactic reinforces the unique value and the unique promise of the brand. Right.
Outstanding. Well, Rachel Gogos, founder and director of strategy at Brand ID. I appreciate your taking the time today and having this conversation with me. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. It's been great.
Thanks for listening to Evolving Your Workplace. Is there a topic you want to discuss? Let us know what you think in a review. And don't forget to click follow to stay up to date on upcoming episodes. Thanks again for listening and see you next time.